Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking, I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Hello, everyone. This is Ryan Tripp. I'm here for the New Books Network, the History Channel. Today, I'm going to be talking to Professor Ricardo Cubas Romcholi. He's from the Universidad de los Andes in Chile. He's Associate Professor of Latin American History. Last year, he published The Politics of Religion and the Rise of Social Catholicism in Peru, 1884 to 1935, Faith, Workers, and Race Before Liberation Theology, published by Brill, again, last year. Welcome to the show, Professor.
Thank you very much, Ryan. I'm pleased to be here and to talk about my book.
So before we dive into the prompts, let's discuss the cover selection of your book. Can you discuss a little bit the photograph that was selected as the cover of the book?
Yes, well, this is a photograph of one very famous indigenous photographer, Martin Chambi, Peruvian, who, this is a photo of 1939, which in Ayaviri, in Puno, in the frontier in between Peru and Bolivia, very close to the frontier, and it's called the La Ceremonia de los Sirios, which is this big camp. Sirios, I don't know how to translate it into English, but Sirios are these big candles that you show here. And I think this photograph expresses many things of my book, you know, the presence of the church among the popular classes, you know, and in an Indian region, in a region where there's a lot of native Peruvian presence.
What prompted you to study the rise of social Catholicism in Peru during the late 19th and early 20th centuries?
Well, really, my interest was to explore the role of religion in general in the shaping of the contemporary public sphere, also in the shaping of the civic culture, contemporary civic culture, and the challenges that religion had to face in the interaction with the economic, cultural, and political processes of the modernization processes in the world, and how these processes affected religion itself. And I think this aspect was mostly neglected in Peruvian and Latin American historiography, which has been concentrated in other topics. In the specific case of my manuscript, I aimed to address an historical debate on the role of the Catholic Church in the social, cultural, and political life of modern Peru, set in the larger context of a process of Catholic renewal which took place in Europe and other regions of the Americas. And also, another reason that prompted me to deal with this topic was that since the 1960s, the study of this aspect became heavily influenced by many sociological and post-colonial trends that characterized Catholicism as a powerful obstacle to modernization, social change, and democratization. Or, in other words, it was characterized as an ideology of order, a traditional ally of oligarchy. And from this point of view, or from this viewpoint, It was only after the Second Vatican Council and with the rise of liberation theology at the end of the 1960s that the Catholic Church began to have a serious commitment towards the social problems of the country and in the formation of a democratic civic culture. I thought, having this panorama, I thought that it was necessary to offer a more complex picture about the roles that Catholicism played in Peruvian public sphere before liberation theology. In other words, what role the Church played during the late 19th and early 20th centuries. Of course, despite the hierarchical structure of the Church, we do not have to understand Catholicism as a monolithic force. No, there were many groups of interests, intellectual tendencies, organizations, and political leanings. However, I think it is possible to see also during this time a general common trend. So I wanted to understand these trends in Catholicism.
By way of introduction, please describe how and why the Spanish crown undermined the ecclesiastical pillar of the realm through its regalistic policies and the diffusion of Enlightenment ideas.
Well, first I have to explain that regalism is almost a synonym of Gallicanism, which in simple terms is the assertion of the state's power over the church and the defense of the autonomy of national churches with respect to Rome. An opposite trend, which I'm going to explain later, is Ultramontanism, which defended the authority of the Pope over local churches, and while supporting the continuation of church-state union, they also advocated ecclesiastical independence from political intervention and internal church affairs. Well, going to the core of your question, this problem happened in the 18th century under the paradigm of enlightened absolutism or enlightened despotism. The Bourbon kings who came to power in Spain in the 1700s pretended to expand the power of the state over other corporations of society, and the most powerful of them was the church. They did not aim to eradicate Catholicism, but to reform the church under their own ideas and to control ecclesiastical structures in a more inclusive way than the afterwards, their predecessors. They changed the nature of the patronato. The patronato was the authority given by the Pope to the Spanish kings to intervene in many aspects of ecclesiastical discipline and organization by stating that this was not a concession of the Pope, but an inherent right of the secular power given directly by God to the crown. Well, the Bourbons, the most important blow of the Bourbons against church autonomy was the expulsion of the Jesuits from the Spanish domains in 1767. But there were many other measures, such as confiscation of lands, many blows against the autonomy of the religious orders. This created a resentment among many members of the clergy. It's not a coincidence, for example, that in the case of Mexico, the first leaders who proclaimed independence were priests, such as Miguel Hidalgo Costilla and then Morelos. No, the same happened, the same in lesser extent happened in Peru, where many of the first members of the first Congress in Peru were members of the clergy.
Can you please explain the politics of anti-clerical liberalism and patronato, the genistic Freemason regalism, as well as Ultramontane Catholicism during the early Republic and post-1845 Guano periods?
Well, perhaps the most important conflict during the early phase of the Peruvian Republic was, with respect to church-state relations, was between liberals who supported a realistic position towards the church, which means that they wanted to exercise the patronato over the church. In other words, to intervene in many aspects of church discipline. And the other side was represented by ultramontane Catholicism, that looked for the assertion of Pope authority over local churches, and wanted, despite that they wanted to preserve church-state union, they also wanted politics out of the control of the internal affairs of the church. During this period, I think there was a renovation inside Peruvian church, led by one very prominent priest. His name was Bartolomé Herrera, who managed to create a very important educational reform that was instrumental to form a Catholic elite for the formation of a new Catholic hierarchy. And they were important for the renovation of the church in ultramontane terms, following the guidelines of Pope Pius IX.
From 1895 to 1919, how and why did religious institutes and the church become independent from the civil power and its internal organization and in the control of programs of study in the seminaries?
One very different aspect of the church in Peru with respect with Mexico was that the political relations between church and state were more less conflicted. The church was able to call for the assistance of many new religious institutes, especially new congregations, male and female. And they managed to create a very important network of Catholic schools, and also one important aspect in the cultural renovation of the church at that time was the creation of the Catholic University in 1917. I think this cultural presence was instrumental to create a more independent church from civil power, because they had priests and lay people had a better formation. With this better formation, they were able to create new organizations, lobbies, and also they could enter again in the intellectual debate over many social issues and also on many political problems, on the political problems of the country. They also managed to establish some alliances with some of the key politicians in Peru, especially within the Civil Party and the Democratic Party.
What were the consequences of church economic dependency on the Peruvian state and its gradual independence, as well as the ensuing debates over civil marriage and divorce, as well as the law of religious tolerance? Also, what were the goals of the Sociedades de Beneficia?
Well, during this time, which is between 1895 to 1919, which many historians call this period as the Republica Aristocratica or Aristocratic Republic, the church, there was a process of secularization of many state entities. And the church had to face this fact, no, that many aspects of social life were not going to be controlled anymore by church legislation. For example, and one important milestone for that was the civil marriage, the proclamation of civil marriage, and also the law of religious tolerance. Before this law, which was enacted in 1914, Protestant or other religions or other religious creeds or other creeds could practice their religion in a private way. They could not have public churches. This led to this great... can we repeat this question?
Please briefly trace Augusto Leguía's Onceano and his support for the church, particularly by addressing debates over the Patronato Republicano, civil marriage, archbishop ties, and the 1921 Catholic Social Action.
Well, the time of Augusto de Leguía Onceano is very interesting for church history. Now, Leguía was a civil president who imposed a kind of authoritarian regime from 1919 to 1930. And he attacked one of he was very critical of the former main political party, which was the civil party, which was an oligarchic party. No, and Leguía is like a proto-populist president. No, he addressed the middle classes and the working classes and the Indian people and the Indian population. And he sought to establish a kind of alliance with the church in order to have an impact on many of these populations. He didn't have to have a strong fight with the church over some secular reforms, because many of the reforms that the church opposed were all already done in the previous period. The, for example, the law of civil marriage, the law of religious tolerance were enacted during the previous period, during the presidency of José Paro. So at this time, the church played an important role in supporting many of the social works of Leguía. For example, the Patronato de la Raza Indígena. The Patronato de la Raza Indígena was a state institution which its objective was to deal with the problems of the Indian peasant communities in rural Peru. And he, in charge, he gave the authority, the direction of this institution to many of prominent bishops who canalize many of the denounces of the Indians towards many landowners, against many landowners, and they relied on the church in order to give bishops and many priests the initiative to propose laws to protect the Indians. In this way, Leguía was very important for this social change to use the church as a to canalize some of his social policies. One of the problems with this alliance was the closeness between the Archbishop of Lima, Emilio Lizón, and Augusto de Leguía. Lizón endorsed many of the authoritarian measures of Leguía, and this generated social unrest, especially in 1923, when there was a protest against Leguía, and well, this archbishop was quite active in supporting the president. Some years afterwards, when Leguía fell in 1930, because of a revolution, Emilio Lizón had to submit his resignation to his post, and he had to live in exile first in Rome and then in Spain.
During the early 1930s, why was the rise of radical parties in the Peruvian political arena, such as the Peruvian Aprista Party, a cause for concern among many Catholic leaders of the epoch? If possible, in your response to that question, please address the anti-clerical dimensions of the 1931 to 32 constitutional debates, the repercussions of the 1932 emergency law, the Aprista repression, and the Sanchez assassination, if you can.
Well, the early 1930s were a very intense, problematic phase in Peruvian history. after the fall of Leguía's regime, there emerged the first mass parties, the parties of very popular parties that helped some radical programs. There was the Marxist movement. The most important of these was the Communist Party. And also, perhaps the most influential was the Aprista Party, which was, at that time, it was quite radical, quite close to socialism and Marxism. But its leader, Victor Raúl Ayala de la Torre, wanted to create his own ideology and his own proposal for Peru and for Latin America. He pretended to create a Latin American party. A third radical party was the Unión Revolucionaria, which was a pro-fascist party. The three of them had, in some measure, either anti-clerical or regalistic tendencies. And the APRA party was very critical of the church and its structure around the country. Even in one moment, Victor Raúl de Ayala de la Torre proposed to create a national church, and he was an admirer of the Mexican Revolution. Well, how this was taken by the Peruvian church? Well, they were afraid that many of the facts that were or the processes that were happening in other parts of the world would be replicated in the Peruvian scene. For example, they always referred to the case of Spain, the church persecution in the Republican Spain, or the problems that the church had to face in during the Mexican Revolution, especially during the Calles regime. Or they also were very afraid of a replication of the Russian Revolution in Peru. So they tried to influence in many ways many of the Peruvian politicians, especially the more moderate, in order to, especially during the constitutional debate between 1931 and 1932, in order to create a more moderate constitution. A key person in this negotiation, I think, was Victor Andrés Belaunde, who was a very important politician and intellectual at that time, who was a very important lawmaker as well, law professor as well, who managed to create some channels of negotiation with different groups. The main leader of that time, which was President Sánchez Cerro, decided, on one hand, he was a Catholic himself, but he didn't want to pressure the church in order to face his most important enemy, which was the Aprista Party. No? And he decided to focus on the Aprista Party and repress it with the emergency law that banned the legality of the Aprista Party and also the Communist Party. There began a repression against the militants of both parties, especially the Aprista. And there were two attempts to assassinate Sánchez Cerro. The last one was successful in 1933. This led to a general condemnation of the Aprista Party, both by the church and by other political actors.
How and why was the platform of the short-lived Catholic Union Popular connected to the encyclical 1891 Rerum Novarum and the social code Malin?
Well, the Union Popular was a moderate democratic Catholic party in this very difficult time of 1930, between 1931 and 1932. And they were quite critical of many of the problems brought by capitalism in Peru, but also they were critical of the communist and socialist proposals. No, so they what they pretended was to apply the social doctrine of the church, which was mostly expressed in Leo XIII encyclical Rerum Novarum in 1891 and the social code of Malines. So what they supported, what did they support? No, what did they support? Oh, the legality of trade unions, the right to of just salary, the legitimacy of strikes, but also they defended private property. And they, as some of the few of them who became congressmen, they proposed a series of labor reforms in Peruvian legislation. In, I think they pretended to be a political expression of social Catholicism in politics.
Please briefly discuss changes in church-state relations under the pontificates of Leo XIII and Pius X, addressing the arrival of religious institutes, church centralization, the Latin American or Peruvian Catholic congresses and councils, as well as the social Catholicism ideas of the Francisco Mariano Halguin, Pedro Pablo Gino y Piola, and Pedro Pascual Farfán de los Godos. Any one or all?
Okay, this was a time of between Leo XIII and Pius X. Was a time of Catholic renewal, a religious renewal in the Western world, and this was expressed also in Peru. This was a time that, despite the advance of the secularization process in many European states, and the loss of the papal states during the pontificate of Pius IX, there was a time of renewal. How was this renewal expressed? Well, in the new, the foundation of new religious congregations, both male and female, in the stronger presence of the laity in the life of the church, both female and male associations, the development of social Catholicism, many Catholic entrepreneurs, many Catholic workers, legislators were very active in the way they address the most difficult consequences of the expansion of industrial capitalism in the world. So, and also, this was a time where bishops were working together more in episcopal assemblies, which were meetings between the bishops of each country in order to create a common points of view or common viewpoints on several social or political issues. So it's a time of renewal. So this renewal was also expressed was present in Peru. Peruvian church was benefited by the arrival of many Catholic congregations. For example, the Marist brothers, the Marianist brothers, the Salesians, the Sacred Heart, Los Sagrados Corazones, and other the Sisters of Charity and the Daughters of Charity as well. During this time there was the appearance of one very brilliant generation of bishops, of very important and influential bishops in Peru. Some of them were, for example, the Franciscan Mariano Holguín, who was bishop of Arequipa, and who was the creator of the first circle of Catholic workers. He was a bishop very committed to the social question in Arequipa and in other parts of Peru. Another very important and very influential bishop was Pedro Farfán de los Godos, who was bishop of Cusco, and afterwards he became Archbishop of Lima. We can say that he had a very important work towards the native peoples. He encouraged the studies of Quechua. He also developed he played a very prominent role in the Patronato de la Raza Indígena, this state association created by Leguía in 1921. And also another very important figure was Pedro Pablo de Ignati Pierola. He was an auxiliary bishop of Lima, and he was more like an intellectual who developed many manuals for Catholics in order to inspire it in Rerum Novarum Encyclica. These manuals of social action for Catholics were spread along in Lima and other cities in the country.
Along similar lines, please briefly explore the efforts of Catholic lay associations in late 19th and early 20th century Peru, as well as the Union Católica's embrace of the Rerum Novarum encyclical. If possible, in your response, please also briefly address, if you can, associations for the advancement of women and children, and include those female suffrage debates, as well as student groups.
Oh. One important aspect of this Catholic renewal in Peru was the role of the laity. Perhaps the most important association of the laity in Peru was the Unión Católica. The Unión Católica was an association of many, both male and female people. Many of the directive members of this association were part of the elite, the local elite, but they managed to also attract people from other classes, from the middle sectors and from the popular sectors as well. They began to make many actions. I would say two main kind of actions. One, the pastoral, their pastoral missions were related to catechism, to the spread of faith among many, the church formation, religious formation of people around the country. And in the same way, they acted as an association to collect money in order to finance the Catholic missions in the Peruvian Amazon region, in the jungle. And they were, especially the female members of the Catholic Union were important economic supporters of these missions in Iquito, in the department of Loreto, which is in the Amazon region in Peru. And the other very important activity of the Unión Católica was in the press. They supported some important newspapers. One very important was El Bien Social, which was relevant in Lima during the first three decades of the 20th century. And the branch of the Unión Católica in Arequipa was also very active in press. Now they supported El Deber, which was the most important newspaper in southern Peru. So they were very active. So apart from their pastoral mission, they were also committed to social activities. For social activities, I mean social work with workers, with native Peruvians as well. Now, in this sense, they followed the message of Rerum Novarum encyclical at that time. With respect with women, we have to take in account that in many cases, women were female members were the main participants in these institutions. They were the more active. They were those who played an essential role in collecting funds in order to finance many church activities, both in schools, in missions, or asylums, you know, and many charity works. And I think this is a time, you know, of great activity for women. Also, we have to stress not only the role of the female laity, but also of the female religious congregations. The difference between this time and the colonial times was that now women were members of institutes that were dedicated to the active life. Before, most of female religious were belonged to contemplative orders, so they were committed to praying and doing manual work inside monasteries. Whereas during this time, they were dedicated to three main tasks, which were education of women and children, health, and missions also were very important. With respect to female right to vote, I think one of the most important defenders of the right of women to vote in general elections, in presidential elections, was Victor Andrés de Lahonde, this Catholic intellectual. He was very prominent in the debate during the debate of the Constitution of 1931, the debates between 1931 and 1933. He could not succeed in this measure because radical groups in the Congress were afraid that female population will vote for Catholic parties. So they prefer not to support this proposal of Belaunde.
What circumstances facilitated the rebirth of Catholic education in Peru and the founding of multifarious schools with curriculum connected to social Catholicism, such as the Via Maria Academy in Miraflores, sponsored by the U.S. Sisters of the Immaculate Heart of Mary, which you referred to earlier? Especially my grandmother went to school. In your response, please also discuss the dissemination of a social confessional print culture.
Well, as I said, part of this Catholic revival in Peru was possible because of the arrival of many religious congregations, many of them from France, some from the United States, from Spain, from Italy. And a main duty for them was to create this very big Catholic network of schools. also it was possible because politicians were not did not oppose to these measures, in part because of the state. The state could not fulfill. It wasn't possible for the state to create schools in many parts of the country. So the church was seen as an aid for the state actions in this topic, no, in education. So we see the very influential presence of Jesuits, of Marists, of the Holy Cross, no, of Sacred Heart in all around the country, both for male and female students. And also, as I said before, a milestone in Catholic education in Peru was the creation of the foundation of the Catholic University in 1917 by a Belgian religious father, you know, Jorge de Pilac, a Belgian priest. This was possible. This also created a good environment for the diffusion of the spread of a Catholic press in many parts of the country. Perhaps the most important Catholic newspaper was in Arequipa. I think Arequipa was one important center of Catholicism in Peru. This newspaper was El Deber. But also we saw the multiplication of many other newspapers and journals. For example, El Bien Social, for example, La Colmena, which was the newspaper of the Circle of Catholic Workers in Arequipa. And among the academic journals, I think one very important and influential was El Mercurio Peruano, which was founded again by Victor Andrés de Lagón, this very active intellectual, which belonged for many years to the Catholic University of Peru. This was a very important place for discussion, not just with Catholics, but also with non-Catholics, but in a very respectful way.
What circumstances gave birth to labor movements and the educational as well as housing aims of circles of Catholic workers in Peru from approximately 1895 to 1935? In your response, if you can, please briefly discuss ideas on the reconciliation of capital and labor via nonviolent protests by Victor Andrés Balonde, who you already mentioned, Mariano Garcia, and the Franciscan Francisco Cabré. And if possible, please also elucidate those statues to the four-section CCW of Arequipa, drafted by the Franciscan Mariano Helgun.
Well, Peru, from after the War of the Pacific, was a war between Peru and Chile that ended in 1884. Peru, afterwards, during the late 19th century and early 20th century, Peru began a process of social and economic modernization. And this modernization brought the formation of a working class in some of the biggest cities, such as Lima, Arequipa, Cusco, Trujillo. These movements many times were influenced by radical ideologies such as anarchists, Marxists, socialists, and then aprismo. The church also wanted to have some influence among these popular classes in order to not to lose its influence on society, and many So Catholic social thinkers have a critical view on the work conditions of many of the problems that this working class have. So they wanted to apply in a meaningful way this doctrine, to put in practice this doctrine. The first one, I think, who did very significant, the first who took important step to do that was Bishop Mariano Aldini, before he was bishop, he was a Franciscan friar in Arequipa. In 1897, he founded the Circle of Catholic Workers there in that city. And this model of Circle of Catholic Workers was later replicated in other cities, in Lima, in Cusco. I think this Circle of Cusco still exists until today, in Trujillo, and in other regions. They were not as strong as communist or Aprista trade unions, but at least they wanted to create a Catholic working culture, and they replicated many of the activities of these other secular trade unions. For example, they created night schools, a school for the children of the workers, the symbols, anthems, flags, libraries, conferences, and also they helped them to be, well, they created also these newspapers for these working movements, and developed some mutual aid societies. Among them, they developed mutual aid societies, and one interesting initiative was the creation of some housing projects, as it was the housing project in Arequipa, Leo the 13th. No, they wanted to create houses for workers. No, one of the ideas is that to make the worker to become a proprietor, to have a private property, to have private properties, no, and to help him with some of the problems they have with their bosses, no, with the owner, with entrepreneurs. But in contrast with socialists, they emphasize not a class struggle, but they wanted to create ways to of non-violent protests and a kind of reconciliation between capital and labor. Most of the priests who were involved in these circles of Catholic workers advanced this idea, to try to create a reconciliation between labor and capital, but in extreme case, they supported strikes, also with Victor Andrés de Lagunde and other congressmen to develop a social and labor legislation in the Congress.
What were Catholic conceptions of the, quoting you, mestiza cultural synthesis? And how and why did social Catholicism sustain assumptions about indigenous psychology, yet also the same ideas denounced indigenous exploitation and promoted native culture and languages along the Amazon and elsewhere? In your response, if possible, please further discuss ideas promulgated by previously mentioned authors and delegates to Catholic councils and congresses, particularly ideas advanced by Isaias Vargas.
Well, the contradictions in some of the sayings of many priests, well, we can explain this because the church was not a monolithic structure. No, but there were many positions inside the church. Now, what I try to show in my book is that there was a trend inside the Catholicism in that time that I call Catholic indigenism, that represents many priests and bishops that wanted to defend Indian rights from exploitation, for many kinds of exploitation in the country at that time. They were opposed to two main intellectual currents at that time. One was the social Darwinism of many positivist thinkers that believed that the country was sick because of racial miscegenation, and that they wanted to promote the integration of what they say were superior races, basically to whiten to a white population, more white population in the country. The church opposed most of, I would say most of the Catholic leaders were radically opposed to this conception. And the other extreme was a radical indigenism that wanted to ban most of the Western influence in Peru, and some use the Indian cause in order to promote revolution, a radical revolution. Well, the position of many of these Catholic intellectuals, Andrés Lahonde, Farfán, Isaías Vargas, and many others, was that Peru is a cultural synthesis, a mestizo synthesis, that Peru is composed by many different traditions, that Peru had to learn to live and to appreciate each component of Peruvian society, the Indian legacy, the African legacy, the Asian legacy, because there came many Chinese and Japanese immigrants during the 19th century, and let's say 19th century, and also the Spanish legacy, and also other European traditions that came to Peru during the 19th century. So they wanted to create this consciousness, but also to understand and to validate the Indians in the Indian culture in many ways. For example, Isaías Vargas and many priests who were or Indian or mestizos were very active in promoting Quechua. La Academia de la Lengua Quechua, for example, in Cusco, was very important, and many of the members of this academy were priests. Another feature was, as I said before, the participation of the church in the Patronato de la Raza Indígena, which was not really well studied before, and the concerns, their actions in order to protect Indians from the problems of land, of their lands that were, they were taken, their lands were taken by many land owners during, or by some mining companies during this time. Especially during this time, that was a period of economic expansion in southern and central Peru. And all other very important action towards the situation, the human rights of native people, were those in the, this fight was done by Catholic missionaries in the Amazon jungle during that time. The Amazon region was explored by many rubber companies that exported rubber, but they, in many cases, they explored and killed many ethnic tribes. some of the first people who announced this big problem in the jungle were missionaries, Redentorists, San Franciscans, Dominicans in those regions. And this aspect has been, I think, the only historian who has studied in profundity this aspect is Pilar Garcia Jordan, a Spanish historian.
Well, I have one more question for you. What can we expect from you next? Are you working on another project? Are you taking a vacation? What's up for you next?
Well, at this moment, I'm working in two projects. One is deepening my studies on the role of the church in the Patronato de la Raza Indígena during the Guía government. And I'm also working in another very different topic. Well, it's related to Big Data. A little different is about the history of Catholic universities in Peru and Chile, the creation of both entities, the mutual cooperation between Catholic University of Peru and Chile.
Well, we hope you remember the New Books Network for those projects in the future. Thank you for being on the show today, Professor.
Many thanks. It was my pleasure to be here.
So the book is The Politics of Religion and the Rise of Social Catholicism in Peru, 1884 to 1935, Faith, Workers, and Race Before Liberation Theology, out by Brill last year on behalf of Professor Ramachiavi and the New Books Network, the History Channel. This is Ryan Tripp. Please tune in next time.